You have your Bibles, I want to invite you to turn with me to Matthew 28. So what I want to do this morning is I want to tell you three things that Jesus has overcome and that the resurrection affirms to us. They come to us very clearly out of Matthew 28. Actually, we're going to back up to Matthew 27. In fact, I want to begin reading just a few verses of the crucifixion story, the cross story. We're not going to read the whole thing, but we have to have that in order for us to understand the light of the resurrection that comes to us in Matthew 28. And so if you'd read with me, if you have your Bibles, in verse 33, let me pick up a few verses. It says this, and when they were come into a place called Golgotha, that is to say a place of a skull, they gave him, Jesus, vinegar to drink, mingled with gall, and when he had tasted thereof, he would not drink. And they crucified him, and parted his garments, casting lots, that it might be fulfilled, which was spoken by the prophet, saying, they parted my garments among them, and upon my vestures did they cast lots. Go down to verse 45. Now, from the sixth hour there was darkness over all the land until the ninth hour. And about the ninth hour, Jesus cried with a loud voice, saying, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani? That is to say, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? Go down to verse 50. Jesus, when he had cried again with a loud voice, yielded up the ghost. And then finally, verse 54. Now when the centurion and they that were with him watching Jesus saw the earthquake and those things that were done, they feared greatly, saying, truly, this was the Son of God. In the following verses, we have a very quick story about a man named Joseph of Arimathea, a wealthy man who had a tomb. And so he went to Pilate and asked Pilate if he could maybe take Jesus' body. And so they prepared Jesus' body for the burial and they entombed him there in Joseph's tomb. And then we have a little story about the Pharisees. They come back into the picture and they got worried. It should be this great culmination. I'm sure the guilt of all of this is weighing down on them. But really they were worried that Jesus had said that he was going to rise from the dead. And so they came to Pilate and said, we want to make sure that there's no funny business that happens and somebody would steal his body. And so we're going to ask if you would put a guard by the tomb and maybe we could get a big stone, a big rock to seal it so that we would know that nothing would happen. And so these verses tell us that story and really we have the gloom, kind of the darkness that comes along with the crucifixion. You can imagine where the disciples were at. I mean, they just a week before, less than a week before, they thought the king was coming riding. He was on a donkey, but riding together, and they thought the kingdom was going to be established. I mean, they were all ready to go, and now just like that, I mean, in a matter of days, everything that they had believed was going to happen, the rug had been pulled out from under them, and they didn't know what to do. And they were confused and discouraged and dismayed, in fact. We read some of the things that they did during this time, but there wasn't a lot of hope, and they didn't know really what to do. And in the darkness of those days, if we can track along with them, in fact, we really have to feel that in order for chapter 28 and the resurrection to dawn in the brightness with which it does. And that's sort of the picture, the gloom of a night, and then Easter and the resurrection is the light of the sun that's bursting forth, just kind of the rays that come across, and you can sort of read that happening as we continue in chapter 28, verse 1. In the end of the Sabbath, as it began to dawn toward the first day of the week, came Mary Magdalene and the other Mary to see the sepulcher. And behold, there was a great earthquake, for the angel of the Lord descended from heaven and came and rolled back the stone from the door and sat upon it. His countenance was like lightning and his raiment white as snow, and for fear of him, the keepers did shake and became as dead men. And the angel answered and said unto the women, "Fear not, for I know that you seek Jesus, which was crucified. He is not here, for he is risen as he said. Come, see the place where the Lord lays." Somebody here, real quick, if you have a phone with you that has a calendar, I want you to look real fast and tell me on your calendar what happened, what's written on your calendar 2 days ago. 2 days ago is April 19th, 2019. Somebody tell me real quick what's on the top of your calendar. Not the place where it says, you know, take out the trash and go get your hair cut, all right? Something else on there, anybody? What's there? Good Friday, right? Good Friday's on the top of that page. But you know, we just read a story, at least at that time and in that understanding of chapter 27, where to those that were watching, it didn't feel a whole lot of good happening. In fact, they may have seen it more as a Black Friday. It really was a dismaying time. But of course, we know the rest of the story. So we know why it's called Good Friday. It's called Good Friday for a lot of reasons, but foundationally, at the very base of Good Friday, what we celebrate on our calendars year after year is this idea that there was a really big problem that was solved. And that problem, according to the Bible, is the problem of sin. And Good Friday celebrates, the cross celebrates for us the resolving of a significant problem in our lives. So we're talking in terms of overcome. I mean, that's the key word that the choir and orchestra brought before us. So what was overcome? What did Jesus' death and what did his resurrection overcome? And I want to list these three things for you. We'll talk about one for a little bit, and then two and three we'll hit very quickly. But here's the number one thing that he has overcome. I think chapter 27 tells us he's overcome sin, and he's done that by offering forgiveness. If I asked you this morning what your biggest problem in life was, I wonder what you would say. You'd probably answer something like, "Well, you know, I've got a lot of relationship problems." Or maybe, "I'm under a lot of financial stress." Or maybe something else if I asked you what your biggest problem is. But what if your biggest problem was something else? Moment of truth for us here this morning. How many of you in the past 6 months have done something or said something or thought something that in the moment that you said it, you immediately knew that what you said wasn't a good thing? It made you feel badly, it made you feel guilty. Or maybe not even that you came to that point right away. You know, maybe you were in the heat of the moment, you really didn't feel anything at that time, but a little while later when you got away from the situation, you sat down for a minute and you looked back on it, something inside your heart just made you feel badly about what you had said, what you had done, maybe a thought that had crossed your mind. And not just that you felt badly about it, but you knew, if you stopped to think about it, you knew internally, without anybody telling you, you knew that this thing that you said or did or thought, you knew that it was a problem. And even so much that you understood that this problem would affect your relationship with God. In fact, the Bible tells us this. It tells us that inside every person is an understanding. The Bible calls it a conscience, this understanding of right from wrong. It's not just for you. I mean, you're not the only one who feels that way. Everybody does. It's not just this culture. It's not just because maybe you've grown up sort of learning certain things were right or wrong within your culture. I mean, we can track the generations of people. We can track different culture groups around our world historically, and we know. And the Bible says that inside every one of us is this sense of right from wrong, this sense of good from bad. And when we do wrong, we know it. Nobody has to tell us that. And not only do we know it, but we know that that thing is going to cause a problem. We may not understand the whole thing theologically, but we know that it's created, if I could describe it this way, sort of a chasm, a space between me and God. We understand inherently the purity and the holiness and the transcendence of God. And whenever this sin part comes a part of my life, I understand that it allows me not to be able to access God, and I feel that. And so there's this chasm that develops, and for a lot of times for us, the sins sort of pile up, and as the sins pile up, the things that I've done and the things that I've said and the thoughts that I've had, they pile up, and there just feels like this great space that has come up between me and God. This is true for all history. It's true of all mankind. So the man has tried to build systems and to put faith systems into place to try to solve this chasm that they feel. They're looking for something to bridge the chasm. So the question throughout history has been, how can that chasm that everybody feels, how can that be bridged? Entire faith systems have been built. Across Asia, you can see religious systems, faith systems. Across the continent of Africa, you see faith systems. Across South America and North America, and even out here to the Pacific Islands, there are faith systems, belief systems, religious systems that have been built up and produced that we've tried to find ways to bridge that chasm that everybody inherently feels between us and between God. Interestingly, all of those faith systems but one start any potential solution from man's side of the equation. So out from the bridge building plans of mankind across history, all throughout history, there's these religions that say, do these things and say these words and light these candles and practice these rituals and maybe stay away from these behaviors, or perhaps if you fork over enough money and if you spend your entire life expending that amount of energy, you might, there's no guarantees, you never know for sure, but you might make your way across that chasm that you feel inherently in your heart. But here's where biblical Christianity is different from every other religion. There's no other religion like this, because biblical Christianity starts the bridge building from God's side, not from man's side. It tells us that there's an all-wise God who looked down on man and he understood that sin chasm that had built up, and he knew that man, no matter how hard they tried, no matter how many things we attempt to do, how many actions we put into place, we could never on our own bridge that chasm between us and God. So this is where we find God stepping out. And we have verses like this very familiar heart verse, John 3:16, which says, "For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believes in him should not perish but have everlasting life." God says, I know that you can't do enough. You can't do enough things. And so instead of waiting for you to try, mankind to try to bridge the gap, I'm going to provide a bridge for you. It's going to come from my side, and I'm going to send you my Son, Jesus Christ, as the bridge, the forgiver that would bridge the chasm of this relationship. Faith and I have a friend She had grown up in a religious home, I would say a church that was sort of a system of do these things. And she was a very committed religious person. She did all of the things her family did, the things that you're supposed to do in this system to gain favor with God and to assure, you know, that you would have an eternity with God in heaven. In her mid-20s, she got married. She married a guy that was a young, born-again Christian. He was young, but he had accepted Christ's forgiveness as a gift to his life. And so they saw some things differently, but they both were concerned spiritually. And so they decided, you know, in their young marriage that they were going to kind of do a church share program. So they'd go to her church on one Sunday, and they'd go to his church on another Sunday, and they kind of shared it. That's how they were going to work that. And I remember there was a day when, for this lady, this idea I'm talking about here, this idea just sort of dawned on her, and it came through loud and clear that all of this time she had been doing these things. She was a very devout lady. She was a great lady, so many good things. But she knew that she still carried along this weight of the load of guilt and sin. It had never been gone. Her relationship with God was very different than his. And I remember the day that struck her. I mean, it was a very powerful time. And the reason she said, she gave testimony, was that she had spent her whole life trying to do and trying to earn and trying to fix. And she did not realize that God had already done everything that she needed. And the only response she could do was to accept his gift of salvation. And I'm telling you, when that light bulb went on in her life, it was a game changer. I mean, it changed everything about her from that moment on, that moment forward. Can I straight up ask you a question this morning, Easter 2019? If you had to go on record today, and you had to state your current bridge plan for spanning the chasm between you and God, how would you explain your current plan? Is your plan sort of still along the idea that man, you can get it done, and if you just try a little harder, if you just fly a little straighter, I mean, if you just do a few more things, you think that maybe at the end of life you're going to kind of have enough, you know, in the resume that God will accept that. Is that your plan? Or is your bridge plan the idea that I've given up on the due plan, and I am resting solely by faith in the work of Jesus Christ? I have accepted his forgiveness for my sin. I've accepted the work that he's done on the cross. I know there's nothing that I can do that I could earn my salvation. And one more thing. If you have ever shifted from your works plan to the God's gift plan, you're going to know it. You would know that it happened. I mean, it's a game changer. Something intensely personal happens inside of you, and there's a radical shift that takes place. There's a seismic shift, almost like two geological plates that shift together in your life, and it never shifts back. If that's happened with you, I'm just telling you, you would remember it. You would know. I want you to hang on this for just a minute, where I want to cycle back to it in just a couple minutes. Can I just mention these other two things? We said he has overcome sin by offering forgiveness. He has overcome, number two, despair by offering joy. And let me just make a quick reference to this, but you read the despair in verse 66 and in verse 1 of chapter 28. The other Gospels, I mean, John talks about Mary weeping. Mark talks about the disciples mourning and weeping. All right, so we have a lot of pictures of this despair. And then the resurrection day dawns. And this light that comes, the resurrection and the truth and the hope that is experienced as these disciples now in their darkness of the darkest night, now dawns the hope that Jesus is alive. My experience is that that same thing that happened 2,000 years ago, this same kind of joy is ready for those who see Jesus. In the last year, here in this room, since last Easter, there are people in this room who have given their lives to Jesus Christ, and they've experienced this joy that we're talking about. And man, you just don't forget it. It changes everything. And my guess is that, you know, in a room like this, there's a couple of people, and you've maybe more than that, but you've walked in here and your life, you would say, boy, my life's not full of joy, but my life is full of a lot of despair right now. You've had nights of weeping. You've had days upon days where you just have no idea what to do. You don't know where to turn. And this morning, I just want to come along beside you, if I can, and tell you that Jesus, I mean, this is the story of the resurrection. Jesus is offering joy to replace the despair that you may feel today. I'm not suggesting to you that you need more religion. In fact, my experience with religion is often the opposite. It has the opposite effect of joy. It tends to stifle joy and leave you empty as you just keep trying and trying and trying, but nothing ever solves the inside chasm. What Jesus is offering to us on this resurrection day, on this resurrection Sunday, is the forgiveness of sins and the joy that comes along with walking with Him. Here's number three. He's overcome death and the culture of death by offering hope and new life. I was telling the group earlier this morning that I checked the statistics this week. The statistics about life, about human life and about death. I try to do that from time to time. And I want you to know that again this morning, the death rate among humans is right around 100%. And it's true. It really is. It's right around, you know, there's this thing, it's pretty consistent here on planet Earth. Pretty much everybody dies. Very little movement around that percentage. All right, so we can kind of kid around about death rates, but almost everyone in this room understands that death is solemn, death is sober. That's why when we read the crucifixion, when we read death stories, I mean, it makes us think, and it brings a soberness to our process. Probably everybody in this room has lost a loved one at some point in your life. You know what it's like to see someone pass out of this life, and the questions that come along with it, questions like, how can they really be gone? I mean, just this week I was talking with them, and now all of a sudden they're gone. It seems so surreal. And where are they now? I mean, I believe in heaven, but is that real? And where is that? And that's why verse 6 is so important in our thinking. Verse 6 of chapter 28 says, "He's not here, for he is risen." And I really love this phrase. "And he said, come see the place where the Lord lay." Actually, I think it's one of the most important phrases in all of chapter 28. Come see the place where the Lord lay. Let me put it to you this way. Take a look at the evidence. And God still invites us to do that. if you have questions about the resurrection, I think it's really, really important that you think and know and understand this. And what Jesus says is still true for us today. Look at the evidence. The evidence is still there if you investigate. The claims of Christianity aren't for some naive, intellectually ignorant people. They're not some fables that are made up. The angel said, take a look at the evidence. The empty tomb, the undisturbed grave clothes, this nearly 2,000-pound stone that had been rolled away from the entrance. The soldiers, this is sort of an interesting thing, but the soldiers had no story about it. I mean, if you kind of think sociologically through this, the fact that they had no story is an indication that something happened here. I mean, they made up a story. You can read it in 12 and 13, but they didn't know. Even the fact that they made this up and it's recorded is this indication that something happened here. The Bible records over 515 witnesses, people that were still alive when some of these writings were written. And I don't have the time this morning to give you the evidence of the resurrection, but it's there. And I would encourage you today, if you're wondering about Christianity, if you're trying to process this whole idea of God, I'm telling you, the resurrection is the most important critical piece. And here's the point. The fact that Jesus conquered death and rose victorious from the grave is the ultimate proof of the authenticity of his claim. He was God. I don't have the time to go back to 1 Corinthians chapter 15. I wish I had a few more minutes. You might look at it on your own. But what 1 Corinthians 15 tells us is this. The resurrection is the big issue. If it happened, then there's nothing we can do but accept the claims of Jesus Christ. There's a validity to his claim of Jesus Christ. If it did not happen, then all of Christianity is a sham. That's what Paul says in 1 Corinthians 15. I believe it. I affirm that. The issue is, did the resurrection happen? So what the Bible claims is this. The fact that Jesus Christ rose from the dead is the proof that he is the Son of God, and therefore we can believe that he has the power over death. And so that means that we can face life and we can face death knowing that there is hope. It's not just this life and then it's over and then it's done. There's hope for the future. And a future the Bible talks about with no more pain. No more heartache. No more tears. I mean, this life is full of so much of that. There's a hope for a future that has none. The last few weeks, we've had several harvest families lose loved ones. When I talk to them, and as horrible as this loss feels to them, to you today, I know that it feels horrible. It's true. But over time, God is going to remind us that this loss is only temporary. It's terrible, but it is temporary. This is the hope of the resurrection. And if we don't have the resurrection, then we don't have that hope. I read the account recently of a man whose young daughter died. Of course, it's devastating for the family. But in her death, Easter took on a new importance. And the father said this, until you stare death eye to eye, Easter is just a word. A nice day with bunny rabbits and eggs. But when someone so precious to you dies, Easter becomes everything. It's an anchor in a fierce storm. A rock on which to stand, a hope that raises you above despair and keeps you going. Listen, my friend, you may have walked in here this morning and life has just overwhelmed you. Or you might be confused, discouraged. You might have had some hopes that have just been shattered in a million pieces. And you look back on the last season of your life, or maybe all of your life, and you see, at least at this point, you just see all this is regrets and guilt and plans that have been wrecked. Listen, the road that your life is taking, maybe for you it's somewhere that you never hoped to go. Man, you're just looking for some hope this morning. Listen to this. It may be the most important thing that you've ever heard in your entire life. And that is that you can find hope in Jesus Christ. And I want to lift up the gospel before you this morning. There is hope in Jesus Christ. Not in the do things that you can do from the human side, the bridge that you try to build, but there is hope in the bridge that God has already provided. He's already done for you, the death and the forgiveness of his son. So really, my friends, my family, Harvest family that's here, it's just kind of laying it on the line here this morning. I've tried to boil down the Easter story to the most basic elements. We've talked about the overcoming, what Jesus has overcome, and what he's given us is joy and hope and forgiveness. The most critical foundational pieces of life. And you know, when you come face to face with the resurrection, with the cross of Christ, like we have this morning, both in the songs that have been sung and now as we've just read and talked about the scripture and about the resurrection, when you're face to face with these kinds of things, I want to tell you this morning, you have to do something about it. You just have to. The resurrection is not something that you can just sort of put in a box and stick in your pocket or on your shelf. You have to do something about it. You can walk away and say, well, I don't believe that. And that's one choice. Or you can say, I got to look into some of these things. I'm hearing you, Pastor, but I'm not sure, and I really need to, this idea of the resurrection, what a critical piece it is, I need to look into that. So you can say that, and that's good. You can say this morning, you can say, man, like these disciples, I believe. But what you can't do is you can't just ignore the story. You can't. You can't just walk out of here and just go on living the way that you have been. You can't ignore the story of the resurrection. We're going to close our service here in just a minute. Very simple close to this morning. And I hope that after we do that, I hope that you'll stay and talk with some people after. But then when that's over, you're going to go on to your plans for the day. Family, friends, I don't know what they are, but you're going to go on. You're going to leave here and they're going to be gone. But some of you, you know that it would be wrong for you to go without dealing with God this morning. Because God has touched you during this service. You may need to shift bridge plans, and you feel that. Your bridge plan right now, you know, is not going to make it. You realize that your plan's never going to get you to where you want to go. There might be some here that would say, man, I think that I've accepted Christ's forgiveness in the Bible way, but I know that I've wandered away from God. I know that I'm not where I should be. Maybe this Easter is the time and the moment, and God's touching your heart right now, and you know that you got to recommit your life to faithfulness to the God who loves you and died for you and has given his life up for you. But there's some here that something intensely personal has happened in some of your lives, and there's a tug that's inside of you that you can't explain in any other way, and you're saying, you know this by God's Spirit in your life, you're saying, I think I need to seal something this Easter.